You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. All right, happy Friday, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. And once again, we have another podcast with Tony Peterson, where a majority of our conversation is us venting to each other about our lives. And so that's why I called this episode a therapy session. It's always good, especially for men, right? Men like to hold their emotions on the inside. They don't like to talk about their problems. They just hold them in and thank God I have Tony for these episodes. I mean, we talk about everything from bees and mice to our marriages, to our children, to being thankful that school is starting up, and upcoming hunts, and Metallica, and just a variety of off-the-wall topics that you guys have come to enjoy. A little break from the redundancy that is the hunting industry. So hopefully you guys enjoy these episodes. Do me a huge favor, go to iTunes, like, subscribe, leave a 5-star review, or wherever you download your podcast. Also, go check out my company, fullsneakgear.com, and buy a t-shirt, period. That's it. That's the only commercial I want to do for this one. Outside of that, I am going to just send a huge shout out to all of the brands that go and that help support the Nine Finger Chronicles. And when I say support, I mean pay my bills. Right. And so I'm working on some other things right now. I'm not sure. It's too early to say. It's just I'm working on expanding the network. I'm expanding the Nine Finger Chronicles and the Hunting Gear podcast. And some more details should come. If they don't come, that means it never happened. So outside of that, we're good to go. I'm just going to run through these. Most of you already know these brands, but if you could do me a favor and just go visit their websites, check out their products and how I use them, that would be hugely beneficial. So if you're looking for a saddle, go to tetherednation.com and check out everything you need for a saddle and everything you need to know about saddle hunting. Wasparchery.com, they have mechanicals, they have fixed blades. Go check it out, wasparchery.com. Discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list, Vortex Optics. They have glasses now. It almost feels like they have new products dropping monthly. And so they have a ton of that. It's velvet season. So spotting scopes, binoculars, get in the truck, take the kids off for a drive and go try to find some big old velvet bucks. Outside of that, we have the Feed Hub. If you're looking for a device that will allow you to remotely control your spin cast feeder, you need to go to MoultrieMobile.com and read up on the Feed Hub. Next on the list is Code Blue Sense, CodeBlueSense.com. I'm a huge fan of I'm a huge fan of the Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit. They have real and synthetic deer urines. They have tarsal glands. They have scent elimination products like laundry detergent and scent sprays. So go to CodeBlueSense.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. And then Huntworth, right? It's that time of year. If you're looking for Huntworth, Huntworth has a sale going on, and I'm not sure how much. I think it's like 10, 15% off or something like that across the variety of options. Huntworthgear.com. And I think all you need to do is go put it in your cart, buy it, and you get the automatic discount. So there's no discount code there. Go check it out. New camo pattern, Vertec, just hit the market as well. And so go check out Huntworth. Last but not least, the Reveal trail camera. Like I said on another podcast, my movement on my farms is kind of dead right now, but that doesn't mean that the deer are not there. and that the trail camera's not working. It's just the deer are in another spot right now. Like I said earlier, I believe I have my trail camera set up for the fall already. So we're in pinch points, we're in staging areas, we're on popular field edges where there has been a lot of historic sign and like travel corridors. So I'm really looking for, once the velvet pops off, the redistribution happens, and I'm hoping that the Reveal 3.0s catch that and allow me to put a plan together for the upcoming season. So go to tacticam.com. Slash cameras and check out the 3.0 version of the Reveal. And that's it. All right. Good vibes in, good vibes out. Enjoy this episode with Tony. Take it with a grain of salt, like we always do, and have a good Friday and a great weekend. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for another therapy session with Dan Johnson and Tony Peterson. Tony, my man, how we doing?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Oh, I need this. So you, just so you know, like, I need this today. So don't screw it up.
Tell me why, buddy. What do you need? What's the trouble?
Okay, here I got a little bullet list of some things that I want to cover today. Okay, does your wife ever ask you a question and then walk out of the room?
Oh my God.
And then get mad at you when you don't answer it,
dude. My wife, yes. Yes, she does. In fact, she did that last night like four times in a row. Because we're in the thick of it. Kids are in softball and all that shit.
Yep.
And so we had to go take the daughters to softball. My wife's like, I'm so hungry. I have stuff for tacos. And she rarely cooks. I'm like, sweet. I'm going to get home from this game. I'm going to go for a run. She's going to cook tacos, and I'm going to come home. It's going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. And she mentioned that, like, hey, you want tacos? Like, you want that tonight? I'm like, oh, yeah, I want tacos.
Who doesn't and want tacos?
Got back, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to just go for a quick run. Come back to the house. I'm like, oh, I don't smell tacos. And then I'm like, what's going on? She's sitting on the couch. She had taken a shower. And she's like, oh, I just made myself a grilled cheese. And I was like, you asked me if I wanted tacos like six times and got me like all excited because I'm like, I don't have to cook this for once. And I'm like, this is going to be sweet. And then you just bailed on the program. Dude, their wives are a heavy lift. Probably shouldn't say that on a podcast, huh?
Well, because they take that the wrong way. They don't care that you said it, but they just say, oh, I'm fat now.
Dude.
But am I getting big? What's the problem?
So yesterday, I threw my phone down on the floor in frustration because we have the exposure for the front of our house. We get a lot of wasps and bees just building, you know, everywhere they can. You know, you go up into the attic in the winter and it's like there's a lot of bee activity around our house. Mm-hmm. And it has been this way since we moved in here like 18 years ago. And my wife, you know, they get super aggressive in the fall.
The bees or your wife?
Both.
Okay.
Both. And so she's like, hey, we need to take care of these bees. And I had just sprayed them a whole bunch, been on the roof. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And it's like one of those things where she keeps asking me, like, I'm not doing what I have to for this situation. And I was like, we go through this every single year. And it never changes. You're not up there spraying bees. Like, you're not, you know what I mean? Like, it's just all on me. I get stung every single year. And she's like, well, I think this year is different. And I was like, well, why do you think that? She's like, I think we're dealing with different kinds of bees. And I was like, do you really think we just had, like, a whole bunch of new kinds of bees move in here after 18 years? They're the same goddamn bees that have been here since we moved in, and we fight them every year, and it's the same thing in the spring and the fall. We have, like, four mice come into the house, and I trap them.
Yep.
And next year, there'll be four. Mickey and Minnie will move in again. We'll kill them, you know, cruelly in a trap. And then the same thing will happen, and we'll have the same fights. And I'm like, why does it have to happen this way?
Yeah. Like, Tony, there are days, I'm a very optimistic person, okay? Like, everything's going to be fine. We're going to have a good day today. Wake up, sun is shining in my room. And I'm like, you know what? I'm feeling good. Go to the coffee pot, get my coffee cup, pour the cup of coffee, you sniff it, you're like, oh my God, this first sip of coffee is just gonna blow my mind. I'm gonna have a great day today. Before the cup even gets to your lips, the wife says something, and I put both hands on the counter, and I envision jumping off of a cliff.
Yep. I know it.
Love her. Like, if you were to write down what marriage is like on a piece of paper and then make that into, like, a business deal and not, like, I love this person, I want to spend the rest of my life with them, and you handed it to someone before they got married, and they're like, this is bullshit. I would never sign this contract. But we go ahead and we do it anyway. So it's our own fault, right?
Yeah, well we're idiots. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I know all the young guys who listen to this who aren't married yet are like, that's not going to be me. Like,
yep, exactly.
Yeah, just wait, guys.
Yep, yep. And of all the people that I'm most frustrated with, and I think I've talked to this about this before, but it's my father. Like, I thought a father was supposed to, like, give you a heads up and guide you in the right direction. My dad didn't tell me shit. And I think it's because he was going through the same thing and he needed a partner to suffer with at the specific time. So he's like, ha ha, gotcha.
Misery loves company, man. Hey, I was thinking about this morning, and it's sort of ironic that you brought this topic up. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's a single woman out there who listens to your podcast?
That's a great question. And the answer is yes.
Oh, okay.
Because she's in contact with me all the time. I'm guessing she's in her 50s. I've had her as a guest. She's a run and gun mobile hunter out east somewhere. I think it's New York. She lives
in
New York.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And she owns a small piece of property. And I've had her as a guest talking about how she hunts strategy wise, how she deals with, like, the gun season. She's a, you know, gun and bow hunter. But I was looking at my analytics the other day, and it was 95% men who listen to this podcast and follow me on social. And then 5% are women. But I'm assuming that of the women analytics, it's men just listening to the podcast or following through their wife's accounts. So I know of one right now, but that's all I know. But that's all I know. So I don't know. I have one woman, two women, but one of them is a lesbian, and she's been on the show before too. And she's talked about, like, being gay and hunting and things like that. So I welcome all people who want to listen to me rant about nothing, really.
Dude, I know you do. I was just curious if you had any visibility into that, because it just, like, kind of struck me this morning. I'm like, I bet there aren't very many women who listen to Dan's podcast.
No. And how funny would it be if the analytics were like one woman, one gay woman listened to this podcast? It was just, like, ultra specific.
Right.
Somehow they knew that this person was gay, but I don't care. Hey, no. Man. The hunting world takes all. As a matter of fact, I had a dude reach out to me. Well, yeah, I think he reached out to me talking about his podcast, and it's called We Do This Too, my buddy Courtney. And he's out of Kentucky, I believe. He just started a podcast, and it's all about people of color and, you know, being in the outdoors and stuff. And it's I had a podcast a long time ago with a guy from St. Louis, and he's a black dude, and he would go to parties, and he would start talking to people, and he would talk about hunting. And people were blown away that this black dude hunted. They're just like, oh, you hunt? You serious? You hunt? And I couldn't understand that. Like, I couldn't understand that only white dudes can hunt.
It's like they know nothing of the history of our country.
Exactly.
Or our species as humans.
Exactly. Exactly. So I got a kick out of that when he came on and told that story. So, yeah, buddy. Well, you know, we're slowly rotting away from the insides with our wives, and I'm sure it will turn into cancer at some day. But, you know, it's something we all have to walk through this journey called life and try to deal with on our own. Yeah. So I meant that in the most positive way possible, by the way.
Oh, you nailed it, buddy. You stuck that landing good.
Exactly. Broke both knees, but still stuck it. All right. So one of the last podcasts we did, we were talking about heavy metal music, and then the five steps beyond heavy metal music that you listen to. All right.
Yeah.
And so the stuff that literal nightmares are made of goes into the music that Tony Peterson listens to.
Not all of it, but man, some of it for sure.
Yeah. Two questions here. First one, are your daughters like into Taylor Swift at all?
No.
No. Oh, are they into your type of music at all?
They are, which is kind of amazing.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I had two visions flash in my head when you said, yes, they are. We're not going to talk about them. But my kids play this video game, and it's called Fortnite.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard of it.
I've heard of it. I've never played it.
It's a shoot-em-up game, third-person shoot-em-up game. You can go in and pick a character. Well, recently, they did a partnership with Metallica, okay? And so Metallica music is playing in this game now. You can be the characters. You can actually be, like, James or Lars or the... What's the guitar? Kurt. And then now they got Fernando or whatever his name is. Roberto. Their bassist.
I think it's just Robert.
Okay. Well, I thought he was Spanish. Either way.
Yeah.
Is that what it means to be accidentally racist?
I think that was an accidental racist moment. But you were also very inclusive just a minute ago, so I think it levels off.
Okay. Great. So why this one's gonna get canceled. I'm getting canceled today. Either way,
not gonna like this one at all.
Yeah, exactly. Right. We'll make up for it with the next one and be like over the top inclusive, where we'll lose our base following just to make everybody happy. But what's happened now is my son knows a little bit about Metallica through a video game. And now he's like, Dad, like, I want to know more about Metallica, play some Metallica and Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets, Justice for All. Like, those were my albums. Right, I love, and then Black Album too. But then everything after that, I never really got into. But those five albums, and so now my son is and daughter, the whole way home from our fishing trip from Lansing to back here to Swisher, we listened to old Metallica, specifically Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets, and Justice for All. Right, and so my favorite thing about Metallica and the old school metal was these songs are 5, 7, 9 minutes long. So it's just pure power for 9 straight minutes.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I love it.
Yeah. When, speaking of Taylor Swift, when Tool came out with their last album, they bumped her off the top spot in the charts for a while. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing an article about it.
This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
Where all these little Swifties were like losing their minds because they're like, this band has 11-minute songs. They're like, couldn't fathom that, you know, because everything that they listen to is, you know, radio-friendly pop, 3-minute get in and get out type stuff.
Yep. So he likes Metallica so much now that his walk-up song for baseball now is For Whom the Bell Tolled by Metallica. So it's not the full bells right up. So we cut it. So it's like it's one bell and then the power hits. And he's like, Dad, this really gets me fired up when I go to bat. And I'm like, cool. Now we got to work on your swing so you can back it up.
Yeah, you, I mean, if you're walking out to that song, you got to at least be able to hit the ball.
You got to be able to crush, or at least get on base and steal something.
Right.
So, yep.
Fight the pitcher, do something.
Exactly. Not. Don't even wait for the first pitch. Just throw your bat at him.
Just kick the catcher down and go charge that mound, buddy.
Yep. Give the bird to like the opposing dugout as you're walking by. And then, you know, he'll never play again. But there's that. Okay. The next thing on my bullet list that I want to talk about, I feel so free with you, Tony, is body hair. Or just hair in general. Okay? So, like, I'll just show you. For those of you who are listening, you might need to go to YouTube. But, like, where is it? Right here. Every year, it just keeps getting further. Is it right here? No, it's right here. Every year, it just keeps getting further back and further back. And it's replaced on my back. Upper back.
Yeah.
So what's your hair scenario
hold on.
Like?
Should we explain this to the audience that can't see it, that you just showed me your balls?
Oh, boy. Those don't look good either anymore.
No.
Like, I used to be very proud of
Listen,
them.
Listen, man, there's an imbalance there. You might want to get checked out. I'm surprised you don't walk in circles.
Well, when I got my vasectomy and it was swollen, I was like, damn. Like, they were the size of apples. And I was like, Jesus Christ, that, you know, like, that's pretty hefty. But anyway, I stand in the mirror. I'm getting gray in my beard now. And it's so much. So if there was just one, maybe I'd pluck it out. But now I've completely given up on it. And my hair is starting to recede back. And I think I'm getting past the point where I could leave my wife and go for a younger, like 10 years younger. I think I'm past that point because they wouldn't find me attractive anymore. So I'm pretty much stuck with what I have. So
I don't feel that. I feel like there's not a question there. There's just a dying man's soul leaking out of his face.
Have you ever seen Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom where the guy drinks out of the wrong cup and he instantly ages to a skeleton?
Mm-hmm. That's you?
Yeah, in a roundabout way, but slower.
It just happens, man. And I talked to Mark about this recently. We were in Montana, because I think he's like 36 now, and I'm like, brother, you're right on the cusp, man. You've been making fun of me for being the old guy for a while. Just wait. You're gonna get right there.
Yep, dude. 37, I'll tell you this straight up, 37 is when I started to feel everything. When I was 37 years old, man, I could, back in the day, my early, like, dude, I could drink as much as I wanted to. I'd still have a hangover. I'd get up, drink a cup of coffee, maybe go for a walk, go lift. I'm back to normal, doing it again. If I did that same shit today, I'd end up in the ER for like a week.
Yep.
So, yeah. Muscle, like, I could take, you know, take a week off, get back in the gym and just crush, and then no problems. But if I did that today, it'd take me like 4 days to recover from sore muscles and shit like that. But you're 37, exactly. 37 is when I started noticing all the joint pain, the aches, the shoulders. I'd need more sleep. I started getting more irritable. I'm like, holy shit, I'm turning into a big asshole.
Dude, it happens.
Yeah.
It happens. My tolerance for people is not high.
Yep. Same here. I don't know. You don't live out. You live in the country, right?
I live in the suburbs, man.
In the suburbs. Shit. Oh, okay. Well, here. Yeah. Do you get the random knocks on the door, like right when you sit down to relax or go to eat supper or something like that? Do you get the, like, dude, hey, we're here to sell you solar power?
If somebody knocks on my door, I don't answer. I'm like, you can stand there and knock all you want. You better go away.
Like, yeah.
I don't, if you're coming to my house to sell me something that I didn't request, I'm not going to talk to you.
Yeah. Our dog goes absolutely bananas, and then my wife usually yells, I'm not wearing a bra, and so then I have to go to the door. And so then, you know, I got to deal with it. Usually I'm just like, dude, I just sat down. I'm completely honest with it. Like, dude, I got 3 kids. I just sat down, and you knocked on my door. Dude. Well, let me tell you about the power of solar power.
If that were me and my wife was like, I don't have a bra, you got to answer it, I would immediately get totally naked. I'd be like, your move. What do you got, Rachel?
Yep, here we go. Here we go. Let's do it. chess. It's a game of chess. Marriage is a game of chess, isn't it?
And I'm way more comfortable with nudity than she is. So
exactly. Same here. All right, now we can actually talk about. We can pivot to something kind of serious right now, and it's like hunting trips, time spent hunting, or time spent doing whatever it is a man wants to do. And I kind of had this awakening a while back where it's not necessarily the money, like money versus time, right? It's not the fact that, like, me and my wife went to Nashville, cost a lot of money this year. I took the kids on it. You know, we took the kids to the Iowa State Fair. Holy shit, state fairs are extremely expensive nowadays. I mean, you used to walk up and just like $20 in your pocket, you're good almost for the whole day. Now it's like you need $300, $400. Holy shit.
Yep.
Okay. Went to, rented a cabin. My wife took care of that part of it. But like going out to eat and, you know, throughout all the vacations and stuff, I'm talking about, you add that up, I'm talking about once in a lifetime elk hunts that could be possible through an outfitter where your success is like really high. Okay. Where your success rate is really high. And so I've realized that I can do my entire season of hunting now that, of course, now I have all my gear.
Right.
But the trips themselves, I'm sleeping in my truck, which people aren't willing to do on vacations, right?
Generally, no.
Yeah, exactly. So I have it's this money versus time thing. And so I get frustrated when the money is spent. She gets frustrated when the time, like I have South Dakota, I'm going to be gone for 8 days. Kansas, I'm going to be gone for kind of as long as it takes type of deal. Iowa is another as long as it takes type of deal. And you add those three up, we're going to be looking at potential 21 to 30 days being gone this year, depending on how far I push it. Because I have started pushing it further now because I know that she's also aging. She's still real attractive, but she's also aging. And I think it would be a complete disaster if she tried to leave me because of hunting. So I feel like I'm safe and I can push the envelope real far these days. Okay.
Man. Well, hold on though. Cause you know now that your days of picking up a newer model are just gone, right? Hers are.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But you have to remember, I don't give a shit.
I'm just saying she's got a lot more options than you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And someone can take care of those options. You know what I mean? So
yeah. Go find somebody else to take care of the freaking bees. That's what
exactly.
I say.
Exactly. So have you ever had that conversation? Like,
you're going on hunting travel? Yeah.
Yeah, like money versus, like specifically money versus time and how that interconnects with your lifestyle.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I've been dealing with that since I've been in the industry, dude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I get it. It's tough when you, especially because we just string together so many trips in a row because of the way the hunting seasons shake out. Mm-hmm. And I get it, you know, and my thing is like, I don't own a piece of property in Minnesota. I used to, I don't anymore. And so I'm like kind of laser focused on just picking up something little that the girls and I can hunt till they don't want to hunt anymore.
Yeah.
And my wife always looks at that like, we can't afford to buy more land. And yet at the same time, like you talked about, we could, if I was like, hey, we should go on three vacations a year and one should be to Disney and one should be to some island in the Caribbean and one should be to Europe or wherever, she'd be like, hell yes, let's do that. Yeah. And the money would be there somehow. Mm-hmm. You know, we might be eating ramen the rest of the year or whatever. But yeah, we have that. We have those fights often.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's to the point now where I'm lucky because all three of my kids are in school full time. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's only certain portions of I hunt during the week. Most of my trips are like I leave on a Sunday and come back on a Sunday. Yep. And so it's only one full day of weekend and activities and getting kids to and from activities. And then, of course, the mornings, getting them on the school bus, and then the afternoons, getting them off the school bus and taking them to their activities is a little frustrating for her. But outside of that, it's they're capable. Like, go poop and then wipe your butt and wash your hands. They can do that now, right? Make yourself a sandwich. They can do that now. So all of the hard shit is kind of over right now. And so But still, it's like you're weighing two things. Like a lot of people, you'll hear people say time is money, and money is time. Well, that's great, but I can go out and spend way less money and have that time frame. So like my dollars per day are way, 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 way lower doing what I would love to do versus what she would want to do. Yeah. Right. And so, or like vacations or, and I love it. Like I love hanging out with my family and my wife and going and doing those things. But, I just don't like to hear, oh God, you went on four hunting trips. Yeah. I went on four hunting trips and spent $50 yeah. compared to,
well, yeah. I mean, that's kind of the time is money thing. You know, it's like a little bit of an antiquated look at it because you're still making money when you're gone.
Yep.
You know, like your podcasts are still getting downloaded. The ads are still getting run. Like mm-hmm. it's not, you're not selling an hour for $25, you know, right. like you're not selling an hour of your time for an hourly wage. It's a different kind of thing, mm-hmm. but there's kind of like that ensconced mentality that's like time truly is money. And it's like, kinda, but kind of yeah. not for a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's another thing, I guess, that it hits me now because I'm starting to ramp up my workouts. I'm starting to shoot my bow a lot more, and I'm just hoping that there's no, like, school doesn't get delayed or something like that, because now I have to get into a solid routine and get everything ready. I mean, my garage looks like a shithole right now. It's yep. just stacks of hunting gear in a corner. And I need to organize it to get it ready for, I mean, shit, in 1 month, I leave for my first hunt. Mm-hmm. So last day or two of September for an October opener in South Dakota. So, yeah, buddy.
I know it,
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, buddy.
I mean, one of my daughters drew a bear tag in Wisconsin, and we are coming up on that quick. Quick.
What's that consist of? Other than taking food, or do you bait?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If you didn't bait, it would be a really good bird watching experience.
There you go.
Like, I mean, you actually over there, if you rifle hunted, you might find a bear somewhere mm-hmm. eventually in the open, but mostly no. So yeah, it's go buy bait, get into the woods. I'm going to be running three bait sites this year because my buddy who I hunt with, his son drew a tag and then his dad drew a tag. So we have three tags over there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, last year we had a couple tags and the state came in and trapped the shit out of them. And we kind of ran out of bears before the season even opened up. So I'm like, I'm not letting that happen. And so we've got, it's a lot of work. I mean, it's a yeah. baiting bears, hunting bears for me is like a pretty low priority thing. Like I don't care about it very much. I'd much yeah. rather be going out elk hunting or something. Mm-hmm. But since my daughter drew, I'm like, we got to do it right. And I have on one of my properties over there, I have a really big bear and mm-hmm. I'm kind of like, I kind of want her to shoot one of those 2 year old bears. That's like 130 pounds because they're easy to handle. And that's all the bear I want to eat. But I kind of want my little girl to shoot a 400 pounder just oh, wow. because it would be so rad. And I say that, not even really tongue in cheek. I think this bear would probably push 400 live weight.
Yeah.
You know, so you're talking yeah. low threes mm-hmm. field dress. It's a giant belly on the yeah. ground. Just gnarly.
How far north?
Not very much farther north than the top end of the cities. It's just, okay. You know, you head over into Wisconsin and it seems like the big woods, like Lake Country starts farther south.
Yeah.
You know, here in Minnesota, I can get there. I head north, you know, maybe like an hour, hour and a half. You start to feel like you're truly kind of in the North Country stuff. Mm-hmm. And I can head just about straight east into Wisconsin and get there. So,
yeah. What's the story of bears coming into the city? Are they like bunched right up to?
Dude, they're all over.
Yeah.
It's now that people have Ring door cameras and they're just, there's like a lot more surveillance going on around mm-hmm. here. You know, like my wife's in all of the like next door Facebook pages and stuff. And there's people mm-hmm. posting, you know, videos of bears at bird feeders and stuff all the time. But we had, you know, we owned a little property just 15 minutes away from our house. And I had bears in there every year. And, you know, they would have, you know, it'd be sow with cubs. And I mean, it was like, It wasn't a lot of bears, but it was a it was way more bears than they should be in an area like this. Mm-hmm. And they're just established. We just didn't, you know, the other thing, I think this is kind of cool. You know, you don't think there should be a lot of bears there. There are. You don't think there's otters anywhere, you know, like where we live. And this summer I've seen three otters at our lake, and you know, you don't think of them being around you, but there's some animals that are just really cool that you rarely ever see that are living right under your nose. And I think it's like such a good lesson when you start talking about big bucks and how everybody's like, oh, I got a picture of that deer. I got a picture of that deer. I'm like, yeah, but so often nobody can kill them.
Yeah.
And they're right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. I always like think about how human expansion has pretty much just destroyed all this environment for wildlife and things like that. Cause, driving back and forth on the interstate, sometimes there's this like small drainage that kind of led up into an ag field, but all the water came down, created a creek when it would rain, and then it would like pass underneath of the interstate. But there was deer in there all the time. And now there's not deer in there ever at all anymore because there's condos there now.
Right.
And so but my question is like, where do they go? Right? Are they going into people? Are they staying there and I'm just not seeing them? And they're living in people's yards, like, I don't know, the Seek One type videos, or are they just being pushed out and going somewhere else and then never coming back?
I don't know. I mean, you kind of just get the impression that they just don't live like that. Whatever little population was there doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
You know, because we think about that, like, well, it's shifting. It's like, well, no, the deer just live like other deer just live here, there, wherever. And this place that used to have a bunch of habitat that's now all these houses, there's no population there anymore, you know.
Right.
Or it's, a, you know, kind of a fringe deal or whatever. But I when you talk about going down the interstate and having like one of those tunnels underneath for water to, you know, like to, you know, drain through there so it doesn't obviously go over the road. I've always been like, do deer ever cross through that? Like, would a deer ever go through that? And I found last year when I was in Oklahoma, I was driving down the road and I saw a big persimmon tree in the ditch on public, but it was like right off of a super busy road. And mm-hmm. I was like, man, like, I wonder if I should just go look at, like, maybe there's a little sneaky spot right off of the highway. And I went down there and there were deer tracks going underneath from private on one side to the public on the other side with the persimmons. Mm-hmm. And they were crossing under there. And I was like, in my head, I'm like, I don't think deer would put themselves in that position. Cause you don't, I mean, they'd have to turn around and run out. There's only one way in, one way out,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, I guess two ways in, two ways out, but, they used it. And I'm like, I just think that's cool.
Yeah. Well, on my mom and stepdad's property, there's an old cattle tunnel underneath when they would run, when the interstate first came there, the guy owned property on the north and the south side. So there was a cattle tunnel that the state put in and the cattle could freely walk back and forth or they could push them through without having to take them over the road.
Right.
And so there's deer that walk through that all the time, but in between properties, it's bananas. And you know, you hear stories about, and you see them about like deer bedding in barns or bedding next, like inside right. some kind of tunnel or in an old storm shelter or things like that out in, you know, BFE somewhere. And then because there's no cover and then they come out, you know, so they'll do just about anything.
Dude, talk about a pinch point.
Oh, right. Right. During gun season, you just kind of open the barn door and start shooting. Like, is there any laws against that? You think like trapping an animal, cornering them
into
a barn?
So.
Yeah. Oh, tell me, hey, how'd you get this one? Well, I slid the barn door open and I just closed my eyes and started shooting.
Yeah, we put five guys on this ridge and five guys on that ridge and we drove them all down to the highway and they all had to filter through the little tunnel under the highway and we had standers on the other side.
Well, I had a guy at an Iowa Deer Classic one time tell me, over in the county that I live in, there's an old, I don't know if they still make ammunition there, but there's an old ammunition plant, okay? It's all high fence, barbed wire on the top, all around it. But since then, since I think they've it's still government property, and you can go in and you can like try to, I don't know, it's like a lottery or a draw, right? You can put your name in, then you can hunt this. But if you shoot a giant deer, it can't be put in the books like Boone and Crockett because it's a high fence type of environment. Although it is like thousands and thousands and thousands of acres, but it's just real. There's a lot of giant deer in there. However, they're intact as much anymore. So I talked to a guy who has permission to that borders the outside of it, and there's a gap in the fence. And he's like, I hunt one tree stand all year long, and I watch deer come in and out of this gap all day. And then this was back when, instead of cell phones, people had flip books that they would bring to these deer classics and show you all the deer that they had shot in the past. This dude's shooting giants that are coming in and out of this gap. And he goes, no one's told me it's wrong or what I'm doing is wrong, but he's on private ground outside of it. And so,
I mean, I guess why would that be illegal?
Yeah, I don't think it would be. Mm-mm. I don't think it would be. It's just a circumstance, I guess.
Right.
So I just kind of wish I had one of those pinch points on some of the properties that I hunt.
I can't even imagine what that would be like in some places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's, there's that.
There is
so
that.
There's that. So my four bullet points, I've talked about my four bullet points. Do you have anything that you want to talk about today, Tony?
Man,
what's on your mind today?
I don't know. You know, I'm kind of gearing up for, I'm excited for this deer season in a way that I haven't been in a while. I mean, I drew an Iowa tag, which is cool, but I just have a few hunts where I'm like pretty excited, and I just feel like my little girls are getting to the point where they can hunt. Like, we're going to do a little bit of tree stand hunting. We're going to get out of the ground blinds. And I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I've had productive scouting sessions, and I'm feeling this season, man. I think this is going to be a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. I'm really looking forward to this upcoming season. And I think a lot of it has to do with, I'm going to be hunting a new part of South Dakota that I've never hunted with before. I had a guy reach out to me, and he's like, hey man, my group of guys doesn't want to come anymore. And I know that you go to South Dakota every year. I drew a tag. You drew a tag. You want to meet up and try something different? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Let's do it. Okay. I got that. So I have some anticipation about that. Usually I go further into October when I go on my hunt. This is going to be a non-resident opener. So I'm excited for that. Obviously, Iowa is kind of, right now, it's kind of like my trail cameras. I love trail cameras, and I know I shouldn't be worried because there's still a ton of crops in, and once the crops come out, that's going to change the game.
Right.
But I'm not getting any big bucks anymore. Like a month ago, giant deer, now they're kind of gone. The does are there, which makes me happy, right?
So dude, that's kind of what I have going on right now. I mean, I have a couple of big deer in places that I was a little surprised to see, but generally my buck pictures have been brutal lately. And what's weird about that is I've been getting a lot of natural bear movement lately, which makes me think there's an apple thing or an acorn thing going on or something. Because usually when that happens, you know, when all your bucks disappear, and all of a sudden the yogis are walking all over, you're like, okay, there's some kind of food source change going on right now. And we had quite a bit of rain and wind last week when I was up filming a bunch of fishing stuff. And there were a lot of acorns getting knocked down that weren't ready yet there.
Yeah.
But I'm like, something's going on.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I've scouted this property. It's pretty much an old cattle pasture that had been left alone and grew up with Osage orange trees and black locusts black locusts have the thorns on them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the black locust trees, and it's a pit, right? They love being in there. It's low to the ground vegetation. It's thick until the leaves fall off. But the same time the leaves fall off is the same time they start to combine, and then it pushes them all in there. Then that's when I start getting the big deer. Awesome. The other, I guess, hunt that I'm really excited about is Kansas this year. Completely different environment.
What's your timing for that one?
So my uncle lives down there, and he told me, because he hunts Iowa, he hunts Kansas too. So he told me, come down a week later than what you would hunt Iowa. And so he seems to think that the, let's say if I'm feeling the peak around the 7th here in Iowa, then I should come down to Kansas on the 4th. That's what he's, yeah. He says. He lives down there. He has a ton of big deer on the wall. And I don't even think he hunts anymore until it's game time.
Dude, that mid-November stuff, mm-hmm. I'm starting to get there. I'm starting to think like your uncle too, man. Like yeah. The last week of October and then the middle, you know, kind of when it should be like a lockdown phase, you know, it's not a chase fest, but those big deer move,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's kind of my plan. It kind of depends on my timing, but I have a really big deer, you know, body wise. I mean, he's a really nice buck anyway, but body wise, he's just one of those big up north, big woods type deer. Mm-hmm. And he's hanging around this little property I own, like not consistent at all, but I have a setup that I think if I spend enough time in the middle of November that he might come by. And mm-hmm. I think that's going to be, you know, like dark to dark 5-6 days in a row and just see if that deer will come through. But
yeah,
you know, I feel like there's a better chance of killing a deer like that than November 3rd. And I don't, yeah. You know, like I can't really back it up with anything, you know, like, cause normally conventional wisdom, you'd go there the first week and just wait for him to chase something by. But I just feel like for a deer like that, they get out there that time of year when the pressure's kind of off a little bit, you're kind of in mm-hmm. that mid part between when everybody bow hunts the rut and the gun season starts, and you have kind of like a week or 10 days in there where I think the pressure drops a little lower. And I don't know. I think it's a good move. Like, I think you'll have a good hunt down there.
Yeah. I've also heard guys talk like about your scenario where they have a rifle season during the rut. Okay. And then they stay out of their properties and all the pressures around them kind of funnels deer into their property. And then towards the tail end of the rifle season, or when, what's the Minnesota rifle season? Like 7 days.
It depends where you're at. Okay. Usually not, it can be anywhere from 9 days to like 22 or 26, depending on where you live. So,
okay.
and we have, you know, 16 days of muzzleloader backed up on top of it too. Mm-hmm. So it just depends.
Yeah. So there, I would say guys are telling me, especially if it's a smaller property, they lay off, things move in, especially if the vegetation's right. It's thick in there or whatever. I don't know your scenario, but do you ever do that where you lay off your own property during the rifle season and then come in when the pressure's high surrounding that?
Well, you know, the only place that I own now, or the two little properties I own, are in Wisconsin, and their gun season is way later than Minnesota.
Okay.
And so I am going to gun hunt it this year with my daughters for the first time in like 10 years, just for the hell of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't ever run that program because it's like, I don't, by that time of the year, I'm pheasant hunting, mm-hmm. you know, but I've seen it before. And I, you know, this stuck with me so hard. Where I grew up in southeastern Minnesota, we used to have permission to hunt a ton of land kind of down by the Lanesboro area. It was really good. You know, we didn't know what we were doing, but we had a lot of land to work with. And our gun season comes in so early in Minnesota, you know, some years it's like the 3rd or 4th of November, and you're like, I don't want to be done yet,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so anyway, we had this spot where it was along the Root River, you know, bluff stuff. And my dad had said, I'm going to go just drop over that bluff and hunt. Nobody ever goes to this one area because it's just, you know, like there's so many other places you would go, but he's like, maybe the gun season pushed those deer in there. And he said he walked over that ridge and it was just white flags running away.
Yeah.
And he's like, all the deer were there. And so I went in there one night because he's like, you got to go there. There's an old permanent stand like 4 feet off the ground, you know. He's like, just go sit in that. And I walked in there, spooked a few deer out, got into stand, and I looked over and a buck got out of his bed and walked away. And I was like, you know, that was like a big deal at that point in our lives. I was like 12, 13 years old.
Oh, okay.
And I ended up missing a doe three times that night, came in bleeding. I'd never seen that before. And I just remember being like, holy cow. Like, we had, all I had heard my whole life to that point was that when gun season comes on, it's over. You're done as a bow hunter. And then seeing that was like, oh, like they have those gun hunters there figured out so well. And here's this one spot that people just leave them alone. So in the day they go do their thing there and they don't get bothered. And so I think that that strategy of leaving it alone, of course, that's a, like, it's a good strategy, but it's also like, you might have spots like that where you hunt that by no intention of your own become that just because you don't go there. You know, like if you walk out and sit that same food plot you've been bow hunting all year, like where is the thick stuff? You know, like
right.
They find those little areas. And I think I've talked about this a lot. One of the things I used to do up here in the cities quite a bit on the public land up here is I would walk it as soon as the gun season ended. Like, where am I jumping deer? Like, go through all the nasty stuff where the rabbits should live. And start paying attention to, like, okay, they move down by the river bottom here and they stay in this thick, gnarly stuff and mm-hmm. start to build a plan around that. Because that is, like, very telling on where mm-hmm. do the deer go when the most pressure's on them, the most chaotic situation they're going to deal with, like, where do they hole up? That tells you a lot about deer behavior the rest of the year.
Yeah. That's fascinating stuff, too, because I always have that same thought process enter my head during the shotgun seasons here in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And of course we can party hunt, so there's a lot of deer drives and that displaces a lot of deer to and from certain properties. But on the property that I hunt specifically, is it's loaded during archery season, great deer numbers. The second shot, it's almost like they know, right? Shotgun season hits, the first season guys usually kill the bigger bucks. And then they stand sit for a couple days, and then they start driving. Mm-hmm. And then the second season guys come in, and I think they do it just for, like, the tradition and the fun of it. And they go almost daily for the entire second season, which is, like, 10 days, if not more. And so at the end of that, my trail cameras and me trying to hunt that property late season, I know now it's over.
Yeah.
It's over. And so I'm curious to know what you think about this. Like, what allows a deer to get spooked from a property, go away, and then come back versus go away and stay away?
I don't think they go away and stay away very often. Like, I really don't. I think we think they do because we don't see them or they don't show mm-hmm. up on camera. But I remember talking to one of the landowners that lets me hunt, who has let me hunt a long time, their party, you know, they're dairy farmers, so they're second mm-hmm. season Minnesota hunters. And he told me one time about one, we call it the Big Woods, this part of his farm that we hunt. And there's a, like a waterway that runs out of it through a field, bisects this big field, 100-acre field. And he told me about how they did a drive in there. And I know how they set up their drives. You know, they do same thing every year. And he said, they always post somebody on that waterway because deer always squirt out through there. And he said, we went in there and kicked a great big buck, you know, and I don't remember how he described it, but he's like, big one. It ran through there. Nobody killed it. And they had at that point, like 15 people in their party
mm-hmm.
and they would go hard, you know?
Yeah.
And he said the next day they went in there and that buck was in the exact same spot and he ran out the same waterway and they missed him again. And I was yeah. like, you know, and that woods is very open. You know, it's not managed for deer cover, right?
Right.
And that was second season. So there had been groups that there's one group that hunts at first season that has like 9 or 10 people in there. And in fact, they killed 9 bucks on opening day one year, 9 bucks out of that woods. Wow. And then this is the second season with new groups of shotgun hunters. And they kicked a buck out. And the next day they kicked him out in the exact same spot again. And I think we think that they're going to go, you know, a mile away and hole up like there's a sanctuary. But I started thinking about it. I'm like, there's no property there around that farm that isn't getting hunted hard during shotgun season.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not, you know, they're not going to go 7 miles away to a place they'd never been to on the off chance of finding a sanctuary that nobody mm-hmm. hunts. Like, they live in the heart of it. It's a freaking war zone to them. So they know where to go. And if that deer is in there after the first season and he's been pushed around and he found a spot where he's like, I'm going to ride it out here. And then you kick him out and he comes back the next day. That deer has a hell of a lot of confidence in that plan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I see that. I don't see, like, and here's where, what I've seen on that particular property that I'm talking about is it snows, right? And like during the rut or during the archery season, I sit in a tree and I can watch deer. I'm looking at them. And that's my verification that they're there, my eyes. Mm-hmm. But I go there in the snow and there's not a single deer track on the ag property around there. Again, it's not managed for deer at all. Right. It's ag and livestock. And so I'm curious, like, where are they going? Now, to the south of that property is a very big, highly managed for deer property. And what I'm in has food and everything. So I'm thinking the shotgun hunters drive them all out of there and then they just stay. And then spring is when they start to funnel back, when the cover starts getting a little thicker and the food starts to change as well. So
I'm sure that's true, especially if you talk about marginal pasture type habitat versus something that's got some real timber and cover. Mm-hmm. That's a huge difference in survivability for them.
Right. What about a particular buck? I've heard guys in the past, like some serious hunters, and I would say it's DeQuisto. He would say, like, almost to the point where he doesn't give a shit if he bumps them or not, because he knows he's under the impression that they're coming back. It may be a day, it may be 2 days, but they're going to come back. And when he comes back, I'm going to get him.
Yeah.
Type of deal.
I've seen him come back 45 minutes later.
Yeah.
I mean, the last buck I killed when I drew my last Iowa tag in 2020, I bumped that deer out of his bed, set up, and I killed him 45 minutes later. I bumped four deer out of their beds. There was a doe and two fawns, and there was a buck, and all four of them came back. I mean, fast. And
did you bump them from sound, or did they smell you?
They saw me. I walked right up on them. So it was just like a river bottom setup, and I walked in there, and there was a meadow, bluff, meadow, river, mm-hmm. with just a little thin strip of river bottom cover. And I went in to look at that meadow because I thought at the top end of it there'd be a pinch point where the bluff and the river get real close together. You know, you could see it on X or whatever. And I walked in there, and it was windy, and I walked right up on them, and all four of those deer ran up the river. And I thought, man, if they come back here, they're going to come right through that spot I was going to look at anyway. And so I went and picked a spot between two trails, because maybe the river bottom was maybe like 100 yards wide total there at mm-hmm. that spot. But it was kind of the way it's set up. You're like, they're probably going to come through this part. And I set up, and the first deer to come back was that buck. And I shot him, and he ran off, and I looked up, and the doe and two fawns came back. Mm-hmm. So it was like, and those are public land deer. I mean, that was mid-October, but I've seen that. I told this story the other day on a podcast. I walked into an area on this farm in southeastern Minnesota when I was like, I don't know, 20, 21, something like that, because I had found a little seep on a hillside that had water. Mm-hmm. And so below it, there's a trout stream. So if they want to go down the bluff, they can get to cold, clean water. But if they want to stay up on this ridge, not drop all the way down there, this seep was like cool. And so one day in early October, it was warm. I'm like, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to set up over that seep and see who comes in. And I walked in there and I jumped two deer off of it in that right there. And I set up. 45 minutes later, here comes like a 120 and a 140 walking back mm-hmm. through. And they just went out of range. But I'm like, that's got to be those deer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny how something like that will happen. And then, like a good spot is a good spot for a reason.
Right.
And I've done the same thing. Man, I walked into a farm one year. I set up, I watched deer watch me set up a tree stand. And then so what I always do is if something like that happens, I'll put my tree stand on the backside of the tree. And then I just will stop moving.
Right.
I'll set it up, stop moving. And they came right back into that area. Now, I didn't kill any of them because they weren't what I was looking for, but still, like, everything that we think we know about deer hunting or deer behavior can be contradicted by another example that we have also seen out in the woods. Like, right. I can't remember how many times people were like, deer only walk with their nose to the wind. No, they don't. Actually, they probably don't even do it a lot, right? And so, I don't know.
I mean, that lesson there you talk about where you walk in and set up and there's deer all over. Mm-hmm. This is something that I think that a lot of new hunters really do not understand. It's like, even in a place where you have, you know, beautiful bean field, beautiful cornfield, beautiful deciduous woods, and there's deer sign all over, there's going to be concentrations of deer where you can actually kill them during daylight. And that's your job to find them. It's the same thing like an over-the-counter elk hunt. You're looking for a little pocket of elk. And there's elk sign in a lot of places, but where they're killable, there's going to be several of them in one little area. And we don't think about whitetails that way because we're like, oh, they use the beans. They use this whole woods has sign in it. But on October 15th, four spots that they're just concentrated in for whatever reason. And if you can get in there, you're on them in a way that you just won't be just going to sit that field edge or just like hunting wherever.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my friend, a lot to figure out this year still. I appreciate you taking time out of your day to be my therapist for a little bit. Not even the therapist, just a good set of ears and listen to the frustrations in life. And then get us all prepared for the upcoming deer season as well. So thanks, Tony.
I'll be your life coach forever, buddy.
That's the term, Tony Peterson. That's going to be the title of this podcast. Tony Peterson, life coach.
You're so screwed, bud.
I know.
You can do better. You can trade me in for a newer model. Andy Mays, you got Andy Mays' number, right? Call him.
Right. My man. Have a good one. I'll talk to you later, man.
All right. See you, buddy.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.